grass, ganja, joint, doobie, doo, chronic, ace, lobo, loco, loveboat, bud, buddha, blunt, pot, pat, pin, chiba, chiba, 420, and hashish, or hash for short. It's all marijuana.
This is Marijuana Media.
Come in. Brought to you by The Hemp Store at 253 K Road or shop online at hempstore.co.nz.
Do it, man.
Hemp.
Chris Valley.
.co.nz.
You've got a brand new website up there at the Hemp Store.
Z. I'm just pulling it up now.
Good afternoon. Yes, we do. Brand new website. Boy, it's amazing what lockdown brings out of people. But no, we pulled this together, pulled it out of something last week. And like a lot of people in this the sector of the industry, we're still kind of shunned. There's a bit of stigma. And in terms of having the online shop like any other regular business does, if you're in this industry, you come across everything from Facebook and Google advertising through to your credit card processing and your hosting. At every step of the way, they go, nah, nah, nah.
Because of the deck list?
Anything.
Just because of the deck list?
Even the word hemp will trigger things. Seems that because of the hemp CBD being sold in the States, they're just like, nah, no to hemp. And so it's very, very difficult. And anyway, we found an amazing provider, and we're fully online with a new site at hempstore.co.nz. And
I'm in there right now. I just went in and asked me how old I am, which is great because that means it's responsible as well. I love how you're telling me earlier how this all just started by someone chatting to someone over their fence during lockdown. I'm like, fuck, that's a great little lockdown story, eh?
Very safe, a safe chat over the fence.
Over the fence, man. How is he supposed to chat? Yeah.
Can I just chime in as a mystery shopper?
Hello, John.
And say, I clicked online this afternoon purely by chance, looking for some hemp seed oil.
You can just scroll
and
the products.
Went shopping, and it was easy. And then I clicked it on my way into BFM this afternoon. I didn't even think about it being a new website. I just went, oh, it's looking a bit refreshed. Yeah. But it was very easy, the whole process.
Oh, very good. And I see you selected a pickup, and it was waiting for you when you came in.
Mm. True. True story.
The system works.
It was
true story. We're not even setting this up.
This sound staged, but it actually happened.
John will steadily consume those products as well, and he'll be back for another trade at the Hemp Store on K Road. Chris Fowley, cheers.
What's happening in the news, mate?
Mate, well, it's all on this week. Maybe we'll start with the medical cannabis side, where we have some contradictions going on. Andrew Little, as we discussed last week, he said a couple of times now in the media that these new rules have come into effect. There's most products gone, which he said was on the industry who didn't get off their asses. But he was also very careful to say this doesn't take away the ability of doctors to directly import and prescribe other products and just bring in those products for their patients. So anyone who's missed out under the new rules that came into effect on October 1st, just talk to their doctor and they're not just going to import the product for them. Well, the Ministry of Health, rather than backing up their minister, they've gone and told Radio New Zealand that no, this should be used sparingly, and implying that they would take a dim view of doctors who would do that.
Right.
And in fact, it's, it was on News Hub, I think. No, stuff. Oh, God, get it right. MedSafe investigates doctors and clinics for importing unapproved medicinal cannabis. So that's the headline that they're investigating. It's kind of quite chilling. Whereas the minister himself is saying, no, carry on. So we need a bit of clarity there. But clinics, there's a few clinics in Auckland now that have specialist doctors prescribing. And they're kind of saying, well, in fact, one of them, Dr. Mark Hoto of Green Doctors, he's saying, well, if he's got 2,000 patients, he should be able to bring in 2,000 bottles at a time. Mm. And yet the ministry might be thinking that that's bulk importing. And so there's a bit of clarity, I think, perhaps, that needs to go on there.
Right.
But often when these things play out in the media, that's what you get, because you get some people in Wellington go, oh, we better sort this out.
Right.
So speaking of which, you remember last week where I said that, the week before, I wrote my blog, does the cannabis industry need a supermarket-style intervention? And last week, I summarised that blog and sent a letter to Andrew Little. and we said last week how I just got the form. This has been noted. Thank you for your advice. Well, turns out on Monday, a slightly better reply came through, and Andrew Little's office has sent my letter to the relevant officials to investigate the issues that I raised.
Well, there we go.
They're going to report back.
And now you can get cannabis from Countdown. Great.
Hopefully. Awesome. I'm saying the opposite. Yeah. What we've actually ended up with is an industry that is going to create a supermarket-style duopoly that you actually... Well, you know, you need the backing of the billionaire, which is the only products that we have, is the billionaire Peter Thiel's Tilray products, or the billionaire Guy Haddleston's Helios products, or you have the multi-billion dollar company Sativex with their really expensive product. And that's all that's available, right? It takes the backing of a billionaire or a stock exchange listing to get something to market, because the only other people that are close in New Zealand have stock exchange listings. And... you know, is this really the kind of industry that people are wanting, that's what it takes? You know, it doesn't take that to bring a natural health product to market, or to bring a food product to market, or to open up a craft brewery or other types of things. You don't have to do a stock exchange float or rope in a billionaire just to open up, you know, a small business. So it seems to me, and I know I bang on about this, but they've just got the settings way too wrong. And by setting it so tight, they've limited it to this tiny number of people who can participate. So it turns out that, you know, I'm not the only person that thinks that way, that actually a bunch of researchers from Massey University, Chris Wilkins, Marta Reichert, Benuli Witherwanchi, I'm sure I got that wrong, but they have written a piece in The Conversation that's been picked up by News Hub and I think Radio New Zealand too. Experts say it's time medicinal cannabis was treated as an alternative therapy, not a pharmaceutical.
Yeah.
And hear to that.
Well, because it is. It's an alternative to pharmaceuticals, so there's no point in treating it.
Well, you could have both, right?
Yeah.
You could have both. It's just in the market. It's not one without the other, but if we treat it as an alternative therapy, like by treating it as a pharmaceutical, you kind of ring fence it into these tough pharmaceutical rules that, as I say, only billionaires can navigate.
Right, right.
If we also have an alternative therapy pathway, which is the kind of thing that I've been going on about, then A, you get more people can participate, but most importantly for patients, they're more likely to actually bring it up with their doctors.
Mm.
And as they note in this piece, the vast majority of people continue to self-medicate illegally, with illegally sourced cannabis. They're not participating in the legal scheme. This is via green fairies or personal networks or regular dealers or growing their own. They've been left out. And as they say, many of these are the very communities that advocated for legalization in the first place, but remain outside of the tenuous legal system. And a lot of that, as I say, is not just the price and the difficulty of the product, but even bringing it up with their doctor, where, you know, there's a bit of a power relationship and a power imbalance, and people might not feel comfortable with that. Whereas an alternative therapy is something that a doctor can have a conversation around. They're not actually writing a prescription, but it's more... it's a lower barrier or sort of threshold for people to bring up the conversation and talk about it in the first place.
Right.
And this goes to the heart of the equity of it, of who actually gets access. Do we want a system where only wealthy people can afford to have access?
And that's what we have with pharmaceutical, a lot of pharmaceutical stuff. So,
well, pharmaceuticals are funded. So no matter what your income, you get paid. You pay a $5 prescription fee, it's funded, right? Apart from a very small that aren't. Well, cannabis is in the unfunded, so it is entirely dependent on your income.
Yeah.
And that makes it highly inequitable. It means that access is just limited to people either with a very short-term condition or that have a big bank balance.
It's the worst-case scenario for a medicine, isn't it, really?
Yeah, I kind of think so, yeah. Mm. You know, good for the companies that have already got through that that gateway, but for everyone else, you know, where's the benefit?
Yeah.
So, I think this is a really interesting article. It's great to see it on News Hub, and hopefully we'll get some consideration by those same officials that are looking into that letter that I wrote.
Sure.
What else, Chris Valley? I believe you'd shared an article with us about potentially the police and authorities turning a blind eye to minor drug use.
Yes, well, this is really interesting. So there's been a bunch of public health officials, but in particular, Michael Baker, who's been one of our chief architects of the COVID response, calling for decriminalisation actually as part of the effort to stamp out COVID-19. And the reasoning being is that we're down to the kind of the marginalised communities, the outliers, the people that aren't necessarily mainstream, And a lot of those people are put off by an authoritarian approach. And you know, this kind of thing where we're seeing the government kind of, you know, working with some gangs to get across to people, and they just kind of hold their nose and do it for the greater good. They might not like working with gangs, but they know, hey, this is a vulnerable community that is potentially part of the spread, so let's get involved with a public health response. And Michael Baker and some other experts are saying, hey, we need to broaden this actually to everyone, and let's decriminalise drug possession, or at least give the police a bit of a directive to back off. And you've got to do this publicly. You know, you can't just have police as individuals deciding that, because then there's no clarity around it. You've got to have a public statement from the top saying, we don't see this a priority. There is no public health interest in enforcing that part of the law.
Especially given our future being in mucking around in parks out in the open. You know, I feel like it's going to be quite an outside summer. So we want to be able to just relax out there.
I think you're right. And actually, there's a study that was published just this week that actually goes to the heart of this too, as to why cannabis users in particular may counter the vulnerable population, right. and might need a bit of extra emphasis or a bit of extra help to get through this. And so the study came out of America, where they've actually found the what they call a breakthrough infection, which is people who have already been vaccinated and then get COVID later on anyway. Yeah. And what they found, this was looking at substance use from alcohol, tobacco, and all the illegal ones, and people who did nothing and everything like that. And when they adjusted for things like comorbidities and socioeconomics, what they call the confounders, after they did that adjustment, the only group that had a higher rate were what people who have got what's called a cannabis use disorder, CUD. Now, this is a bit like when people say, oh, you're addicted to it, but it's actually a bit more than that. It's like the most extreme use. It's definitely harmful use, and it's a very small number of cannabis users. But among those, that group, so the interesting thing that I think the authorities here need to be aware of, that among that group, as I said, it's a very small number of people. It might only be a few hundred people in New Zealand. It might be a couple of thousand. It's probably in that range. This study has found they had a 55% chance, or 55% higher chance than the general population of having a breakthrough COVID infection. And so if you have that knowledge, that means you can adjust your behavior accordingly. It means you can reach out to those populations. But it also means, you know, among those people, I mean, to make sure perhaps they're really thinking about getting vaccinated, or if they're not, they're really doing extra precautions because they may be at extra risk.
How would someone know if they've got a CDU?
A CUD, a cannabis use disorder. Well, this is looking at people who are being diagnosed with it. So that's how you'd know, is you've been diagnosed with it. There will obviously be some people without a diagnosis, but generally, if you've got it, you will have come to someone's attention because of what you're doing is harmful to either you or people around you. And so for some reason, you've been diagnosed with it. So as I say, it's certainly not typical of your average cannabis consumer, and we have to be careful to not extrapolate the study to all cannabis consumers. It's certainly not the take-home message of it. But the message really is that there's a small group that needs some extra attention, and that might just be public health messaging to let them know that they're at increased risk.
Sure. Place to be is Malta, apparently, you're saying.
Mate, Malta is the place to be. Sunny Malta. Put on your virtual reality and
it's a tax haven, so wicked.
There you go. Is it a tax haven? It's going to be a cannabis haven. Malta has just put forward a law that I think if we'd had it as the referendum, it would have passed. It would have smoked the opposition. It would have won by a huge majority. It's a real shame they didn't. It's actually a little bit like the one that we got here. Some of the numbers are in common with what you're allowed to possess and your four plants at home and things like that.
Can't smoke outside, though, so it's just...
Well, instead of going all full commercial, it's grow your own or join a social club.
I like that.
And the social clubs can cultivate cannabis communally for all the people to join.
Great.
And that's done in private and just spread amongst the members. And so it's like a non-profit, non-commercial model, but you get legal access. You can grow a few plants at home. No smoking in public, just like our one was. But otherwise, as I say, I thought, well, this is actually taking the best bits. And that full commercial end, which I think was
just shooting too far.
Probably into it, they can see the logic, but I think there was enough of people that just thought, it was going a bit far. So, anyway, this is not a referendum. This is the government and Malta just doing it.
Oh, okay.
And,
God damn it.
Good on them.
And you're saying Singapore is still not the place to be, as far as cannabis.
Singapore, bloody hell!
Yeah, they don't play, man.
Singapore's about to execute a man for cannabis. He trafficked a kilo, and well, you know, a kilo. What's that? If you grow at home, it's a couple of plants. You know, for your average cannabis consumer, it's about 6 months worth of cannabis. A half 1 year's worth. Some people might think it's a lot, but actually, not that much. But anyway, he's in the wrong country and he is about to be executed.
Wow.
Don't go to Singapore when COVID is over. That will be my thing. And on a similar topic, Dubai, there's a British guy who's facing a 25-year sentence at the moment for someone came and visited him and brought a vape pen with some CBD oil in it. He's left it behind, and the guy got raided, and he's looking at a 25-year sentence.
Jesus.
So don't go to Dubai either. There's my other tip.
Will they test it and see that it's got CBD, are they just going through with it? Don't care if it's no THC or whatever.
It's just cannabis for them, eh?
Far
and it's a 4-year minimum over there. Possession of anything is a 4-year minimum. But I think something like oil, they just treat it a bit more. So,
Okay, so we're actually not too bad here.
Yeah, not too bad. But having said that, we briefly talked about this earlier today, Hungary. There's a new law coming in here, and I hate to say all doom and gloom and bad things, but this new driving law is coming in.
Maybe
we can talk about it in a bit more detail next week, perhaps.
Yeah.
But it comes into effect on December 1st this year, so it hasn't quite yet.
Saliva testing.
Basically, it's very similar to Australia. It's a 1 nanogram spit test, and the Drug Foundation actually warned this week that at 1 nanogram, it will just catch every cannabis consumer in the country, pretty much. And so it's no longer about impairment, which is how that bill started when the Green Party put it in the last parliament. Mm. It's now just about detecting cannabis users, and it seems this is what happens when the country votes no. So instead of getting a wonderful legal system, instead we're now going to have, from December the 1st, police doing roadblocks with 1 nanogram spit things that pretty much any cannabis consumer is going to fail.
And meanwhile, COVID-19's around. Can I just have your spit, please? Yeah, cool.
Yeah, incredible.
Sweet.
Maybe they won't be straight into doing a spit test with COVID around. We'll have to see what their protocol is for that.
All right, Chris, we'll chat next week, and we'll dig into this saliva testing.
Stay safe.
Thanks, mate.
Alright,
let's do it then.
That was Marijuana Media.
Thanks to the Hemp Store. Visit them at 253 K Road or shop online at hempstore.co.nz.